Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mona.
Hey, Mona.
We have been talking about this USCIS fee increase for quite some time. Rebecca, actually, we've been talking about it for over a year because that's when it was first mentioned.
Yes, I think it was just looming over everyone's head. When is this happening? Now it's actually happening.
So we have news for people, finally.
Well, the concrete news.
Yeah, but the really interesting point is because we all, as we've been discussing, this isn't just a small fee hike. This is really a huge ramp up. How will it affect the EB5 market? I think that is a question that both developers, investors, practitioners, they're all questioning.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because it's going to affect investors differently than how it's going to impact regional centers and developers, and seeing how things will go from here.
Just before we actually go into that, Rebecca, I think that it's interesting to note that although this has been, it was brought up about a year ago, it was only on January 30th that USCIS published the final rule. Prior to the final rule really getting published, it has to go through what's called OIRA, which is the White House's Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And, you know, USCIS has done this all the right way. And it's interesting because OIRA normally take about 90 days to complete its review. They rushed this one.
Yeah. Well, we knew it was coming. So in the Reform and Integrity Act of 2022, so since that was published in March of 2022, it did indicate that there has to be a fee study from USCIS within the year. And then 60 days after that, they also had to come up with what would be the adjustment of the fees because they wanted to achieve efficient processing times. So we knew it was coming, but...
But here's the thing, Rebecca. I mean, we had webinars. Well, I don't know if the webinars, because it was really a one-sided thing. We had those stakeholder meetings with USCIS. We were allowed to give our opinions. This proposed schedule was roundly criticized by everybody for the astronomical increases. Did it make any difference? No.
No. Nope. They tried to bring this out before, like you said. There was a litigation that was able to stop it coming in.
Oh, there was?
Yes, there was litigation. So it was able to stop the fee increase. But this time, we don't see any litigation coming in to block this. Not at this time, anyway.
Well, there were thousands of comments at that time about the potential repercussions of the hikes. And most of those comments, I will say, were related to other immigration areas where people were really complaining that it wasn't fair. This is there to help people and people can't afford it. But right now, I mean, obviously, we're just talking about the EB5 side. And in comparison to the increases in other areas of immigration, EB5 is like crazy. It's 140% or 240% of the increase. And yet they're expecting the EB5 people to just accept it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some fees are reasonable. One fee was reasonable, I think, which was the increase of the I-956G form. It went from, at this time, it's $3,035, and it's increasing to $4,470. That's reasonable. Yeah. It makes sense. You know, we think about it, like, are we due for a fee increase? It's been some time, but that's a reasonable fee increase. Mm. Now, the others are just, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it, but to me, it's unfair and it's unreasonable to expect increase.
Well, I actually thought about this, Rebecca. We discussed the size of the fees. Mm-hmm. The biggest one, which is really going to affect EB5, I think, is going to be the increase for projects, because we are going from a fee of 18,000. And if you remember, back in 2016, it was 3,000 something to file a project, an exemplar petition. Then it jumped to 18,000. And now from 18,000, it's going to 47,695, nearly 48,000.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, here's my thought, though. Mm-hmm. Adjudicating a project takes a lot of effort because they have to hire their own economists and their own security lawyers and their corporate lawyers, because these projects are getting more and more complex and there's more and more layering. There is a slight understanding, perhaps, that the cost for USCIS has increased. So I can kind of understand it, but I still think it's way too much.
Yeah. So I think we're touching on the base of, is it justified? Right. And I get it. I understand, especially if you're creating a new regional center, right? Or like you said, filing a new project documents, it does take time. And maybe a one-time fee of $47,695 makes sense. Imagine if you have to make an amendment.
Oh, gosh.
That is where I think we're going to see issues.
Yeah. I mean, a small amendments, like, for example, the management changes. Mm-hmm. Will they make an amendment? You want to change the geographical scope? You know, these type of things are not fair to pay $48,000 each time. So I think, you know, if we're talking about the effect of these fees, I feel that more than the investor side, and we've seen that, it's going to affect projects and regional centers.
Yes, I think that USCIS will have to address, and I mean, we've mentioned this in previous podcasts, like we said, even a simple name change to pay almost $50,000 just because you decided to change the name of one of the entities is, I think, is just astronomical for that. We have to take that into consideration with the regional centers and or developers who are paying for this, because there are more than just these fee increases, right? RIA came in. And now there's just so much more compliance and so much more fees and costs that go along with these forms.
Yeah, but the whole gambit has also changed because we are moving more towards an agency structure. There are still the occasional investor who will come in directly, but everywhere, it's not just China anymore. Almost every country has some kind of agency structure, and the agents are getting more and more wise as to, you know, their worth. So they want the full admin fee, they want money on the back end. And I don't think regional centers and projects will be able to afford it.
I agree with you. I think they're going to think twice about how much you're going to have to pay these agents. I mean, you're looking at not only this fee increase, you're looking at all the compliance that has to go into it. So like you said, they have to hire more staff members to make sure everything is being kept accordingly. At any time USCIS has come in and, you know, just check up on a regional center or a project. So you have to be prepared for that. You're looking at additional fees, right? Fund administrators came in now. So there is another cost you're looking at. So these agent fees, if regional centers and projects have to pay this, I mean, is it really going to be cheaper capital?
Yeah. And if it's not cheaper capital, are we really going to see a good quality project out there?
You know, with rates so high right now, it seems EB-5 is a viable alternative. But if you start increasing these fees as well as some of the administrative headache, eventually when those rates come down, you know, EB-5 may last a little bit longer, but then it's going to run into real headwind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think projects and regional centers, it has to be justifiable. Right. It makes sense. Yes, there was a need for a fee increase, right? If we want faster processing times, if we want efficiency, I get it. You know, they have to get income somehow. But,
but why at the cost of the smallest program?
Exactly.
Well, see, Mona, you went that direction. I was thinking the last time they funded up all the EB-5 offices, did it really help?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. We need to see results, right? If you're taking 4 to 5 years to adjudicate an I-829 petition, why are you increasing the fee so much? We have to see.
Well, Rebecca, we are starting to see results of the new cases. I mean, the new cases under RIA, which are coming in, especially those in the rural category, are being adjudicated within 6 months to a year of being within 6 months of the project being adjudicated.
True. But where does that leave all the old cases? You know, and it's not fair that now you've put the fee increase. And yes, okay, I understand that these new investors, everyone coming in is paying the new fee hike. But it also doesn't mean that you have to leave all the other cases behind.
That's true. And it also, the customer service is just so bad. If you try to, once you have filed, Mark, you wouldn't know this, but once we file petitions, and there are sometimes small errors or there's something which happens, you need to contact the IPO office. It's almost like a dark hole.
Yeah.
Once you filed and they've taken your money and sucked your money, actually, that's it. Nothing happens. And if you do write to them, they thank you and they say, we'll get back to you in 3 months. Mm. So it's just that has to improve. I mean,
yeah,
the dark hole has to improve.
Yeah. And Mona, you know, you made a good point. We were discussing this offline, right? Justification. So, okay, fine. We've got the efficient processing times, expedient processing times. But you also mentioned about staff, additional staff with USCIS, being more sophisticated or specialized.
Yeah, because I just mentioned, I mean, I think as projects are more developed, they have had to increase their staff. And as we know, security lawyers and corporate lawyers, they're more expensive.
Yeah.
In fact, really finding staff who understand EB5 is just a project within itself because EB5 is so specialized and it's so full of nuances.
Yeah. And that's where I think USCIS as well, just hiring anyone, you can't just hire normal adjudicators anymore. You're going to have to hire those with specialized knowledge. I mean, we already know they had economists on board. But I think maybe, like you said, if they're going to be reviewing these projects and doing all of that, they need to have staff with more knowledge.
You know, and also, Mark, as we deal a lot with the global market, it is interesting when we discuss with other practitioners in other countries, they really do not have anything the same way that we do have here in the U.S. Their applications are much more simple. They don't need sophistication on the other side. But then everything else is very different also.
You know, when we compare it to global programs, a lot of it is just real estate based, right? Or donation based. So it does simplify things. I think with the US, we've brought in the whole regional center concept where you could pool. Yeah. And I think because the US is so large as well, you know, there's different, you know, from the East Coast to the West Coast, you're taking in so many geographical scopes. It's just even more and more complicated as we're going along.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine having a little category for rural in somewhere like Malta.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. So it makes sense. And now that we're seeing the global programs are going more and more towards these investing in entrepreneurial types of projects.
Yeah,
it kind of makes it seem like, is it more towards like how we have our direct projects, investing in someone's maybe like technology or some different type of project out there.
You actually made that point that if fees go up anymore, we'll see an increase in direct projects as opposed to regional center projects. And I think you might be right, Rebecca.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, these fees are really affecting the regional centers, right? And then you're looking at it, direct projects. Yes, I know they came in and you could only have one person now in a direct project. But if I was an investor, if you're thinking about it, we've seen regional centers give a reduction in fees, you know, the administrative fees. We may not see that moving forward. So all that additional cost that you might have to pay as an investor, would it be better to put it in your own project?
Yeah, that's a very good point, which brings me to the fact that at the end of the day, despite whatever happens to the regional center, with how many costs they have to pay, at the end of the day, it does rest on the investor. Do these fee hikes kill the program for the investor, do you think?
No, not really. I mean, I guess it depends on the investor, right? Now we've got different categories within that. We've seen a lot. I've spoken to so many investors who say, I don't mind the fee increase. I mean, for I-526 petitions, it is going up from $3,675 to just over $11,000. You know, I would expect it to have gone up maybe $5,000, right? So it has gone up quite a few thousand dollars. But I mean, we see a lot that who are like, no, I'd rather get my petition done right. It's $800,000 that I'm investing. I don't mind the fee increase.
You know, speaking with a few developers recently as well, they have said the same thing because they all thought that we were going to have a mad rush. And I do think we are going to have people coming now, But I don't think it's going to be a mad rush. I think in the same way that there are a number of investors who really, if they're spending, it's not 800, if they're spending almost 900,000, what's an extra 6,000?
Yeah, exactly.
Get it done right.
Yeah. It's not 2019 or just recently 2020 where it's increasing, like the investment amount is increasing. We're just talking about USCIS fees. And so I don't think we'll see that. But I think you mentioned, Mona, that you might see investors who we'll see those investors coming in for the increase who are trying to scramble to get 800,000.
Yeah. But that's always the case.
Yeah.
So the scramblers will be the ones who will also run and try to file before the fees go up. But here's where we're going to see a far more partial filings. And now I know we've discussed partial filings on this podcast before, but I don't think we've ever discussed it post-REIA because there has been a number of changes.
Yes, we have seen changes with REIA, but the concept is the same with partial filings, in my opinion. I know they now said that you have to have the funds have to be in there at least 2 years. So you have to see sustainment of funds in 2 years time, which is in pre-REIA, it was at the I-29. So that could take a long time, whereas now it's 2 years. But at the same time, you still have to be careful when you're doing partial filings.
Well, here's my issue, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. Under REIA, you have longer to pay if you want to do it as partial. But if they're adjudicating faster, that's going to be an issue.
Exactly. You're going to get an RFE if you say, I'm going to, you know, put in the additional amount 6 months later, and then USCIS gets to your case in 6 months and you haven't invested, obviously you're going to get annoyed. And then what happens there? Then you're scrambling to hurry up and file and get your investment amount in so USCIS doesn't deny you. And then at the same time, if you come back and respond to that I-526E NOID or RFE with the investment saying that, well, you're still actively in the process of investing, will they accept that?
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be issues, but I do want to hasten to say that our office has been filing partial investments for over 15 years, and we've been very successful on it.
Yes.
It's not that you can't file partial filings. I just believe you need to be more careful and perhaps just make sure you're with somebody who's a little more experienced because there are more issues to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think at the same time, I think a lot... Look, most of our investors, like we said, don't mind paying that additional amount. So I don't know how many partial filings we'll see moving forward. Most people want to go ahead and just make sure everything's in at once. It saves them the headache of having to produce all these documents later for interfilings and doing all of that. So,
and with interfilings, we have known that sometimes the USCIS gets matched to the petition, and many a times it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just less headache for investors. I mean, if you want to beat the fee increase, start early. You know, I would tell everyone, I mean, to just get out there and just start it now because the fee increase, I mean, we're talking today. I don't think we even mentioned the date. It's going up on April 1st.
Well, there's not a lot of time. We have been, just to say I told you so, we have been discussing this for some months.
Yeah, we have. We have.
We saw it coming.
But I also want to make it clear, Mona, too, that we talk about partial filings and we've talked about skeletal filings. And I want to make people aware
what's
that.
What's the difference?
Yeah, these are two different things. Obviously, you can have partial filings with skeletal filings where we've seen people put in their I-526 petition, a few documents, and that's it. I want to make sure that investors are aware skeletal filings, you know, just be aware of what you're filing. You don't want to file with just nothing because your case has to be approvable upon filing as well. So ensure that what you're putting in, you want to make sure you're putting in enough evidence in there to get your adjudication and get you an approval. We've seen so many mistakes with skeletal filings. We've seen so many delays with skeletal filings. I mean, they're 10 times worse than partial filings. I would just advise investors, just make sure you get in what you can. And then, like we said, partial filings can be done. We're very experienced with that. But just make sure you have an experienced team and you're putting in enough documents to meet the requirement.
I think the same really has to be said of anyone trying to file their own project, entrepreneurial project, and or, you know, the exemplar filings. because I remember when we had those other deadlines, there was the IPO office did speak and about the type of filings they saw, and they just said they were shabby, incomplete petitions. And if you do that when you're filing a project, it's not going to get through.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, you end up spending more, if just for a few thousand for on the investor side anyway, you end up spending more later, because then you're spending on, you know, having to produce more documents again. You're spending on another interfiling. Then you file this interfiling, like we said, may not get to USCIS. So then you're looking at an RFE or a NOID. I feel like there's just so much more headache at the end of the day, rather than just doing it the right way and making sure it's done correctly.
So Mona, Rebecca, what do you think the net effect of these fees are really going to be? It sounds like there's, you know, no effects on the investors, maybe less so on the projects. What's really the impact that you foresee here?
Well, the no effect, I think, is just temporary. I think we will see a few people who will rush.
Okay.
I think the vast majority will not. I do think that overall the industry will just have to suck this up. But what I do see is the big issue. USCIS hasn't been completely transparent about how it's calculated its fee increases, including the big whopping big ones of $30,000. And who knows what the agency is adjusting for, whether it's adjusting for inflation since 2016, or it's not clear how it came up about these figures. So whenever that happens, we get the big L word.
And what would
L word?
Litigation. Oh, guys, come on. Oh, dear. You know, the fee study hasn't even been completed and they're rushing. They've rushed this through. Technically, this could have lasted. They could have had at least another 6 months before they brought these fees in.
Yeah. Well, like we said earlier, we've seen litigation. I'm just surprised we haven't seen anything come out at this point. I don't know if it's too new and people are maybe putting in an application, but it's all about the result. People aren't going to mind paying a fee increase if they see the efficiency of USCIS.
Okay, so here's that this point has been raised many times by all these commentators and people who are questioning this, is that will the fee increases help fund efforts by USCIS to hire more qualified adjudicators? I don't believe they will, because USCIS is broke. And this fee increase is not going to be channeled just for EB5. It's going to trickle around and be used in other departments as well. That I mean, we don't know for sure, but it seems very likely.
Yeah.
And the other point I think which is important to make is that, you know, EB5 always has that vision of, oh, it's for the wealthy investor, the high net worth investor. Well, a lot of the times they really are not. They really are middle-class people who've just used their savings. And I think that it's perhaps not fair to increase the fee for the investors as much as perhaps the project.
Yeah. Well, I think USCIS, what they did, I mean, of course, like we said, they weren't transparent. So how can they go from, you know, we saw the fee increase when I first started back in 2011, and I-526 was only $1,500.
Oh, it was free to file a project.
Yeah. And then it went to $3,675 in 2016. So, you know, it's a small increase. It was doable. But then how do you go from $3,675 all the way to over $11,000, right? And just what is that? It's only a few years. It's not that many years that have, you know, gone by. If it was reasonable, I think it is due for a fee increase, but I just think they were just unfair on what they came up with.
Yeah, Rebecca, I agree with you. And we can complain all we like, but let's just hope that these fee increases, which we all will stomach at the end of the day, that these fee increases do result in a more efficient USCIS, because I can't think of anything better other than increased visas that will help the EB-5 program other than a more efficient USCIS, and not just for those who have filed post-RIA, but for the older ones. And there are many, many older ones who have been waiting for adjudication for many years now. And it seems that most of USCIS's resources are just targeted on cases filed after March of 2022.
I couldn't agree more, Mona.
Yep, let's hope for the benefit of the entire program.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.